July 20th. Jesus says, "And right then, in what is supernatural, one must never be afraid. The one who dictates to you knows what is being said, and the one who reads you understands, because I have also put him in a position to understand. So set aside all human reconsiderations. Remember that you are my spokesman. You must thus say what I tell you without reflecting in human terms on the impression that others may get from it. Therefore, the reasons for which I made Peter the head of the church instead of making my beloved one the head are varied and all just. Now don't go weighing Peter's love and John's on the scale to derive the reason for the choice from that. Your weights and your measures have no validity in heaven. They were two different loves, as their temperaments, ages, and ways of loving were different. Different and equally aimed at the same goal myself, and equally dear to me. So eliminate from this the objections and conjectures on love. Peter was the most mature of the apostles, already respected as a leader by other fishermen who later became apostles. As I stated, he was familiar with life in all its facets of light and shadow, and was endowed with strength of character, boldness, and an impulsiveness which was needed in those circumstances. By his painful experience, he was familiar with the weakness of an hour, and was able to understand the weaknesses of others in the hours of doubt and danger. I have already stated this. He was not the one who loved me most. He was one who loved me with all his capacity for loving, as, moreover, all of the others among the 12 did, including Judas, until he lent an ear to the seducer. In the church, which was to be formed among so many struggles and deceits, there was a need for someone who, by virtue of his age, authority, experience, and impetus, would be able to impose himself on others. And who was like Peter in these four gifts needed to form my church? John was the youngest. With the soul of a flower, he did not know the evil in life. He was a lily with its bud still closed over the whiteness of its interior. He opened in the hour when my gaze descended into his heart, and he could no longer see anything but me. He was a child with the heart of a hero and a dove. Peter was the support for my heart, which saw the present and the future, but John was the comfort. How much comfort just from his sweet smile, his pure glance, and his infrequent, but always so loving, words. To be close to John was for me like resting near a fresh well, shadowed by plants on a carpet of flowers. He exuded peace. But, for the sake of prudence and justice, could I impose him on the others, who were older? One must bear in mind that they were men, destined to perfection, but still men. That is why my intelligence chose Peter, an adult, familiar with spiritual indigence, impulsive, and authoritarian over John, meek, idealistic, young, and innocent. Peter was practical genius. John was poetry, poetic genius. But when times are hard, not only the pens of poets are needed, but iron fists to grip the tiller tightly. To make up for it, I gave my beloved one the vision of the times, to come after having given him my most confidential secrets and my mother. I could say that John, in the temporal order, is the last, and, in terms of the future, the first of the great prophets. For he closes the cycle begun by Moses regarding the Lamb, that by his immolation saves the world, and he lifts up the veil covering over the last day, but believe that in heaven my splendor crowns the brows of Peter and John with the same light, and it would be good for you, not to make human comparisons regarding beings who are superhuman. Jesus further states, "Consider my splendor and my beauty in comparison to the black monstrosity of the beast. Don't be afraid to look, even if it is a repellent spectacle. You are in my arms. He cannot approach and harm you. Do you see him? He doesn't even look at you. He already has so many quarries to follow after. Now do you feel you deserve to leave me to follow him? And yet the world follows him, and leaves me for him. See how glutted and throbbing he is. It is the hour of his feast. But also see how he seeks the shadow to act. He hates the light and he was called light bearer. Do you see how he hypnotizes those who are not marked by my blood? He heaps up his efforts, because he knows that this is his hour, and that my hour is approaching, when he will be eternally defeated. His infernal cunning and satanic intelligence are a continuous action of evil in opposition to our triune action of good, to increase his prey, but cunning and intelligence would not prevail if my blood were in men, along with their honest will. Man lacks too many things to have weapons to set against the beast, and the latter knows this and acts openly, without even concealing himself with deceitful appearances. May his repellent ugliness spur you towards ever greater diligence and ever greater penance. For yourself and for your unfortunate brothers and sisters, whose souls are blind, or seduced and who do not see, or, on seeing him, run to meet the evil one, provided they can get from him help for an hour, to be paid for with an eternity of damnation. I must explain. Otherwise you will understand nothing. Since the night of the 18th, Jesus has been showing me a horrendous beast so horrendous, that it fills me with disgust, and makes me feel like shrieking. Its name is well known. And the good Jesus has me understand that this appearance is still inferior to reality, for no human reality can come to depict supreme beauty and supreme ugliness with precision. Now I will describe the beast to you. I seem to be seeing a big, very deep black hole. I comprehend that it is very deep, but I see only the opening, entirely occupied by a horrible monster. It is not a snake, a crocodile, a dragon, or a bat, but it has some of the qualities of all four of these. A long, pointed head without ears, and with two sly ferocious eyes which are always on the hunt for prey, an enormous mouth armed with very sharp teeth, ever intent on instantly snagging some imprudent creature coming within reach of its jaws. In short, the head is much like a serpent's in shape, and a crocodile's as regards the teeth. A long, flexible neck giving the tremendous head a lot of agility. A big, slippery body covered with skin like that of eels, to give you some idea, that is, without scales, with a color ranging from rust and violet to dark gray, it's hard to say. It even has the color of leeches. At its shoulders and hips, I say hips, because that's where the throbbing belly swollen with prey comes to an end, and the long tail begins culminating in a point, there are four short legs with webbed feet like a crocodile's. On its back, two bat's wings. The beast does not move its big repugnant body. It moves only its tail, which wriggles back and forth in an S shape, and its horrible head with fascinating eyes and murderous jaws. God have mercy! What an ugly beast! From its black cavern it emits darkness and horror. I assure you that yesterday, when I saw it with all the sharpest precision, and did not understand what it was up to there, I felt like screaming with revulsion. It's a good thing, that I saw, that it never looked towards me, as if out of repugnance. If anything, a mutual repugnance. If this is a pale representation of Satan, what must he be like? It's enough to make you die twice in a row just to see him. It's also a good thing that, if the beast was in a corner, my white, handsome, blonde Jesus was very close by. Light and light. If the luminous, consoling figure of Christ is compared to that of the other, his most gentle, clear gaze, to the malevolent one of the other, there is real reason to feel compassion for the unfortunate sinners destined to the latter, because they have rejected Jesus. Well then, now that I have seen, I would like not to see him any longer, because he is too ugly. I will pray that as few unfortunates as possible end up in his clutches, but I ask the good Lord to take this sight away from me. Today it is less intense, and I am most grateful to the Lord. And even more grateful, because the dear voice has me understand the reason for that vision, which terrified me yesterday, when I thought it was destined for me as a warning.